From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. To kick this hour off, consider all the dead cultural products that aren't dead. For instance, if you think that, say, epic poetry died after Tennyson's Idylls of the King in the 19th century, or maybe after Ezra Pound's Cantos in the 20th, check out Wikipedia. They're still being written.
And, of course, we've heard forever that movies would murder theater. Uh-huh. Anybody got Hamilton tickets? And that TV would do in radio. Hey, is this on? Huh. Turns out neither is dead yet. Or even wheezing. And I could go on. The point is, we've all heard that e-books will kill paper books. And since paper books are more profitable for publishers, that will kill the industry. Ergo, the book, dog-eared and scribbled in, that thing we grew up with, is dead.
But not so fast. It lives! Seriously, some numbers. In December 2015, Nielsen BookScan reported that 571 million print books were sold in 2015, a 17 million increase from the year before. What's driving those sales of paper books? And what can we expect from the publishing industry in 2016? Carolyn Kellogg is books editor at the LA Times. Welcome to On the Media.
Thanks.
Would you say that this is the year the myth was overturned that e-books were going to destroy paper books?
E-books have definitely leveled off. They were predicted at one point to be about 50-60% of the market, and they seem to have leveled off at around 25%.
Paper books definitely got a big boost in 2015, but according to the AP, it's due to the rise of coloring books and books by YouTube stars. So should we be cheering?
Well, those are two very separate demographics of people who buy books, so we should. Publishing is always driven by a couple of really big hits, and the big hits usually come out of nowhere. So, like, when Harry Potter first became a big hit, books about boy wizards had not been topping the bestseller list, but then they did. And then there were lots of other books about magic. And so this past year, there were coloring books, which came out of nowhere and exist as a real alternative to your screen. They're really complex, and people are touting them as like a zen way to remove yourself from the constant Twitter, email, dinging, text messaging cycle that you get into on your phone. Or I get into on my phone.
And the YouTube stars?
Well, the people who are buying the YouTube star books are tweens. It's interesting because the YouTube stars are people with whom they have a very intimate relationship through a screen. And you wouldn't think there's anything else to share in a book, but it's a way of transporting that experience into a different kind of permanence.
You said that it's a way to further that relationship with this person you know through the screen, which speaks to the issue of just the fact that this is a physical object that you can touch. And maybe we're reacting to our increasingly digital lives by embracing the analog. You know, vinyl records are back, book sales have gone up, coloring books, you've got this intense relationship because you are actually building on the material that is in front of you.
And Johanna Basford, who's sort of the queen of the coloring books, she started them with these like Enchanted Garden and this Undersea book. She doesn't want there to be an app version of her books. She only wants them in print.
So is print back or did it never really leave?
I think that print felt very imperiled because there was so much change in the publishing industry. But I think it's back. And I think that when we look back at the numbers, if publishing took a couple of really big hits during the recession, so did every other industry.
So last year, Oyster, a book subscription service, which was billed as a kind of Netflix for books, you could subscribe, get as many books as you want. I guess they'd recommend some to you. It closed down. That model just didn't work, but there are others around, right?
The challenge with Oyster was that they just couldn't get enough people to join up to consume books at the pace that they wanted with the publishers that they had, enough to make it work for sort of the big splashy investment that they had gotten. I think the idea of a Netflix for books is appealing to people who are good at selling ideas in Silicon Valley. But for people who read books, you don't consume them as fast as you consume stuff on Netflix.
So how about audiobooks? Sales have grown nearly 40% compared to last year. So they seem to be hitting a groove.
I think their popularity is connected to the ongoing popularity and discussion around podcasts. When you start listening to something and you can get it in installments and it tells you a story and you find that satisfying, then you can go to your library and take out a library book, or you can go to Amazon's Audible store and buy the books there. I mean, Audible advertises profusely on podcasts, which sort of points me to the idea that they've found that a fruitful crossover point.
What you're saying basically is that people live in a cultural universe. And so your consumption of media in one area will directly influence your consumption in another, right?
Yes.
So what are the trends of 2016 in the current cultural universe?
Well, one of the things that I noticed is that there was this huge sort of ramping up around science fiction. All of the major houses seem to be having one new imprint that is going to make a big push for science fiction. And I think that's directly connected to awesome Star Wars. Simon & Schuster launched a science fiction imprint called Saga. Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, their new imprint is John Joseph Adams Books. And he is the longtime editor of the best American science fiction and fantasy. In publishing, we often group science fiction and fantasy together and apart from literature. But I think there's a lot of crossover. I mean, ask Margaret Atwood where her books belong. And certainly when you get to like George R. R. Martin and Game of Thrones, like people are just clamoring for his next book.
You've noted that independent presses seem to be coming on strong.
Yeah, both in terms of the people that they're publishing and the creative and ingenious works of art that they're finding and bringing into our publishing system.
How do they get their books noticed?
Well, you know, that's interesting because small publishers like New Directions or Open Letter, they're on the margins, but now they're getting into our awards slipstream. There were a couple that were finalists for the National Book Award. They've got great books. And when there's an exciting book, word of mouth is the best way to sell a book.
So how would you assess the state of publishing overall?
Overall, I would say that publishing's not dead yet. People of all ages are buying books, and they might be buying different books, but they're all walking into the bookstore or going onto Amazon and putting books in their virtual / real life shopping cart.
Thank you so much, Carolyn.
Thank you, Brooke.
Carolyn Kellogg is the books editor at the Los Angeles Times.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing.
Or politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.